Supervisor.
This is the Music Supercast.
It's in my interest, in ours perhaps, for me to smoke a joint and calm down.
Hosted by Supergroup's Mary Prankster and lead music supervisor David Heyman. Recorded out of their Toronto and LA headquarters. Produced by Sorrel Sound and all vetted by me, Amani Sabri. Check out the Supercast blog at wearethesupergroup.com/MSC and don't forget to share.
I think I got my swagger back.
Welcome back to the Music Supercast. You can find us always at wearethesupergroup.com/MSC and mosey on over to Apple Music. Leave comments and review because we want this thing to be heard. Music matters. Syncs matter. The music supervision perspective, I think, is important because people need to know how to get their stuff on TV because we want to make that happen. And we want to make it happen for you. So find us, email us, yourbandsucks@wearethesupergroup.com. You know, leave comments on Apple Music. Tell us about Chad's production, how great it is. Pressure Amani to come on for a segment. That would be awesome. Tell me my laugh sounds like an elf on nitrous or some shit. I don't know, whatever. Bring it on. Please make some comments. And actually, we got a big shout out. I wish he'd left a comment. Ethan Hawke gave our podcast a listen, which is fantastic. Shouts to Ethan. Big love to Ben Dickey, making it possible, talking about Blaze. We also got a big shout out last night from Brad Pitt about Letterkenny. Apparently, he's a Letterkenny fan. On the Oscars, he was accosted by Ben Mulrooney, for better or worse. But read out, said Letterkenny, and it was fucking awesome. So big love to Letterkenny, big love to Nathan and Jared and Mark at New Metric, and you know, everyone involved in that show. We love being a part of it. We love being a part of the music supervision scene, and we want you to send emails. So yourbandsucks@wearethesupergroup.com is a great place to drop your music, but also send us some notes. And we got some. Sarah in Toronto wants to know, how many songs should I send in my first email to a music supervisor? I mean, I want to hear your latest. I want to hear an album, pretty much. I want to hear a release. I don't want to hear necessarily stuff you're trying to make for film and television. I love one-offs. I love singles. And I love, you know, new two-release EPs, whatever. But I think you got to just keep it tight. And you got to keep that email plane tight. And it's important to really tell them where you're from, what sound you have, and keep it simple like that. We can read your bio. We can read more. Keep it all very tight. Maybe one piece of artwork that's, you know, got its image on the width, so we're not seeing the top of someone's hair when we open it. I think just keeping it tight, keeping it to links, giving us a download option for MP3s is always important, but also give us an option to stream it somewhere live, you know, like on your SoundCloud page or your website or one of those links that has everything. I think that's important. Another email we got from Erica in Calgary, simple one: what are you listening to now? Andy Schaaf. I'm just addicted to Neon Skyline. Second to none storytelling, perfect for snowy nights. And fuck, we got lots of those in Toronto. But we did just have Andy in LA. In LA, we had Andy perform at the H Club. We did a thing with Sun Little and Ben Dickey, and we just did something with Manitoba Music. We had Boniface and Sebastian Gaskin come in from Winnipeg and Mise en Scène, who unfortunately had a little bit of a car accident. We're hoping they're recovering well, and they weren't able to perform. But big, big love to them, and big love to Adele for making these events happen. There's a new spot for Tell Us Out. It features Don't Fence Me in, an old Cole Porter song. We had this, actually I found this. I put on my Scotty Taylor hat and thought of the best kind of approach for these mini horse characters, the Tellus creatures that we love so much. And I thought of Don't Fence Me in, the old Cole Porter song, found a cover by Leopold and His Fiction from Austin, Texas, and we did it. Daniel Leopold and His Fiction put together some demos to kind of tweak the front end of it and use their master on the back end. We have that story coming soon on the podcast. We'll talk about how we beat Elvis. The king is dead, ladies and gentlemen. The story is coming soon, so tune in. And the rest of us will be released February 14th. in cinemas in the U.S. That's Aisling Shin Yee's film. She, Heather Graham, Jodie Balfour, Abigail Panowski, and others from the creative team will be in Los Angeles screening on February 15th at 7:30 at the Lumiere Music Hall Cinema in Beverly Hills. So check that out if you can, if you're in Los Angeles. And February 14th, Utopia Falls drops. The revolution is about to begin. That's right. February 14th on Hulu and CBC Gem, Utopia Falls, the brainchild of R.T. Thorne, who we do have on this podcast coming soon. Music by Nikhil Seetharam and Boy Wonder, who we also have on this podcast coming soon. I'm super proud of the connection we made casting Snoop as the voice of the archive. You'll be reading about that for sure. But I hope that you will take in this series, because we got tracks by Biggie, Bill Withers, Kendrick Lamar, Mos Def, Daniel Caesar, The Roots, Grandmaster Flash, Gangstar, Blackalicious, Busta Rhymes, Jesse Reyes, Sean Leon, Daniel Caesar, The Roots, Grandmaster Flash. Oh my God, it keeps going. I think I'm going in circles now. Wiz Khalifa, Megan Thee Stallion, DJ Shub, big shouts who we had on this pod, J-Rock, J. Cole, Lucas Joyner, Tory Lanez, Shawn Mendes, UNK. It keeps going. We covered Blondie, we covered Susan Vega, we covered Alicia Cara, Nikhil, and Boy Wonder were at the helm of all of this. So big shouts to everyone in the New Babel Orchestra and everyone who made that possible, Noble Street Studios, and a big, big shout to Post Office Sound in Toronto, who we worked tightly with, everyone on that show and who knows who they are. Sean Leon, partner in crime lyricist, man, what a blessing. Hope we can get him on the pod soon. But today on the podcast, we have Mr. Friendly Rich. We're taking a different turn. We're going into that States world. As you might know, States premiered in Toronto on Thursday, February 6th. It was insanity. It was the perfect event, I believe. If I could pat myself on the back for a second, casting Friendly Rich to open up the show with the Layright Boys and the Lollipop People was a perfect compliment to the kind of film that States is. States, the film starring Alex Esso, Jeremy O'Harris, and the girls from Bird Cloud, Jazz, and Mac. They really kill it. And you can find this crazy movie February 11th everywhere. Canada and US on iTunes, Google Play, and Bell and Shaw. So in the U.S., you can find it on Amazon Video, In Demand, and DirecTV. But if you really want a link, I'll find a way to get it to you. You can find the soundtrack now on Spotify. We have wax details coming out soon. We're going to press that thing. And Friendly Rich photos can be found on our website at wearethesupergroup.com. You have to see this madness. We screened a short version of The Melt, a film by Marty McPherson that is an hour-long epic. To complement his album, his new release, We Are All Terrorists, which is available everywhere right now. His latest book, Mortadella is Donkey Meat, Tales from an Italian-Canadian Weirdo, available at blurb.ca and find bookstores everywhere. And finally, check out rpmmusic.org to support the Regent Park School of Music. Of course, Friendly Rich can be found at his Industry Tactics podcast and at friendlyrich.com. Our conversation covers it all, so I've been long enough with you on this intro. I'm going to turn it over to Friendly Rich, and remember, produce or become produce. The great Smalucci. Live and die by it, folks. Friendly Rich on the Music Supercast. Thanks for joining in. Leave comments, all that shit. We love you. Big love to everyone. Enjoy the podcast. So welcome to the Music Supercast, my friend.
Thank you for having me, David.
Rich Marcella, Friendly Rich, sitting at the Supergroup.
This is a way to win me over. A Second City book, a Maile Todd, what is that, a record?
It's a record.
And then a Bob Dylan writings and drawings. And then underneath more importantly, the Douglas Copeland, Terry Fox book.
Terry Fox is a hero of mine. Douglas Copeland is a hero of mine.
Great, great. Then I feel like I'm in a safe space.
Right on.
I love Terry Fox.
Have you ever seen Everything's Gone Green by chance?
No.
Douglas Copeland film.
No.
My first film.
that I ever worked on.
Oh, that is something.
Super proud of that one.
Oh, I'm excited to be here, man.
Excited to have you, man. Yeah, and we've got you here. Yeah. The album is called We're All Terrorists.
It's We Are All Terrorists. I thought it was a bold move to call the album that. I mean, I love playing that song live. It kind of came out real quick.
I'm being facetious. You know, we're not all terrorists.
I don't know.
You're such a lovely guy.
Yeah, I don't know what it means, actually. I haven't really unpacked the tune too much, but I've really, over the last 20 years, been on this kick of like constructive anarchy being a thing, you know, and using creativity, like trying to promote a... I know it's kind of a pessimistic... At face value, We Are All Terrorists is kind of a dark... and the whole record comes off as kind of dark, but I do feel like it has a thread of hope, and I always want to try to promote through all of my work, all of it, like top to bottom, this thread of creativity and community building. And it's going to be all right if you don't shoot up everything around you and kill yourself.
Absolutely. It's not a post-apocalyptic album at all.
Yeah, no. It's a stick with us album, if anything. I know, you know, it's funny about it. Well, not so funny, actually, is my wife thought it was a suicide record. And I'm like, I'm still here, baby.
Oh, boy.
You know what I mean? And no, it's dark. It feels really... And if you see the film that accompanies it, you'll know why, because it's like me rotting in a field in real time.
Amazing.
It's,
and who's making this film?
Marty McPherson.
Okay.
A really talented... He's done a bunch of music videos. He did a music video for one of my prior records, The Great Blue Heron, and...
Fell in Love.
He's a super talented dude, and that's how collaboration happens, right?
Of course, it's like, man.
He came back for more and more and more, and the album resonated with him in a fierce way. Like, he's brilliant. Going above and beyond. I asked him to do, like, what comes to mind when you listen to this, and... an hour-long film of me rotting in a field made out of rottable materials kind of sounded like the right move.
It feels right. It complements the album art. It definitely complements...
It's from the... That's a still from the...
Oh, no way.
From the film.
Brilliant.
Actually. Yeah.
Is that a spoiler then itself?
It is. It is. I rot. Spoiler alert. I die in the film. So.
Well, it's nice because the album itself, and we'll get into some of the cuts, but it's a collaborative effort. It's definitely different pieces of your world pulled together. And when you have someone like a filmmaker to do the bird's eye synthesis of it, it's really a special thing.
Thanks for picking up on that. I've never done a record like this, you know. And that's why it took me like I think 2+ years to make.
So who are some of these people? Because you've done records with like the Lollipop People.
Yep.
Explain some of these kind of groups. We have the Lollipop People, like I said.
Yeah, and those are longtime folks, musicians that I've worked with. The band I'm working with at the Cameron House on the first Monday of every month is Phil Miles, D. Alex Meeks, and Matt Fong. So those are the Lollipop People at the moment. But didn't stop me from pulling in old friends on The Farmer and the Smell, a track I know you love.
Love it.
One of my favorites on the record is Steve Ward on trombone. And I remember you really listened well because you picked up on one of my favorite moments on the record, actually.
Sort of Matadorian kind of moments?
No, what the fuck? Is there a trombone on that? Because I asked, the only direction I gave Steve on that tune is, I don't want people to know it's trombone.
Right.
So we put it through a synthesizer and it's like, it's really out, right?
Spoke to me, man.
Yeah, me too. I'm super happy with how that came out. And that was the producer, James Paul. So he engineered that session in his studio, The Slaughterhouse, with Michael Herring and Tom Juhas. So it's really, I think the whole thing is just like celebrating all these different families that I've almost created through on each track.
Maybe that's why it speaks to me. It feels like, dare I say, a supergroup project. It's a
Damn.
Bit of that. Ooh,
Damn.
Ooh, swinging it all back together, man.
Damn, love it.
These aren't terrorists. These are great people, mostly from Toronto area.
Yep.
And I'm, you know, when I'm framing you in this sort of context of music, I'm really excited to have you because I feel like I've got our 2020s Mendelssohn Joe in here, you know, you have on the album, you nod to, but these are people that I've grown up with.
Wow.
And I was never able to put my finger on what it was with him versus Wesley Willis and Daniel Johnson. And now it's being grouped together as outsider music.
Okay.
I believe that you are making highly produced outsider music. It's beautiful. What's your relationship with Mendelssohn Joe?
Thanks. Mendelssohn Joe is a dear friend who found me through my music, and that's a good way to make friends. And so, and through our national broadcaster. So he heard something I did 20 years ago on the CBC, and he said, I got to find this guy. And he wrote me a letter, and we've been pen pals ever since. A really touching story is that he gave me his guitar that he had used for most of his life in his career.
And who is Mendelssohn Joe? For our listeners who don't know, and I'm trying to be all cool and everyone should know, they definitely should.
Yeah.
One of the greatest artists, I believe, Toronto's ever had. I've always looked up him as a Jewish artist.
Same. You know, interesting. And he's such a cool dude, and he's a wonderful painter and blues musician. He was in Mainline Mendelssohn McKenna. The very influential blues outfit from what, the 70s, would I say? Yeah.
Late 70s.
Yeah.
I've got what you need. It's therapy. So you do the Sophisto. Whoa, whoa. You do the Sophisto. Whoa, whoa. You do the Sophisto.
We've gone back and forth with letter writing. I have a whole box because he takes my letters. I had to type them because he criticized my writing when we were first going back and forth. He said, I can't read this. Like, clean it up or we're done. You know, he's very poignant. And so I did. And so he kind of grades them with his Sharpies and sends them back to me. So I actually have the whole relationship with Joe and I.
Redlined.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
I don't know what I'm going to do with these letters, like, when it's all said and done. Like, I know Bob Wiseman's done the same, and he's actually wallpapered his studio with Joe letters. He's a chronic letter writer,
Corrections
Joe.
And omissions by Mendelssohn Joe.
Yeah.
I think that's a project.
Yeah, I think so. I have them all in a box. I just keep adding to it and adding to it my whole life.
Well, you know, Ontario specifically has, like, many legends sort of living up in the woods, whether it's Ronnie Hawkins or Garth Hudson,
you know, and it's
Mendelssohn Joe. And even going out west, what guys that are contemporaries that are doing, I can think of Caribou, Dan Snaith,
making
interesting instruments out of anything, at his disposal. It's found music. It is ultimately outsider music.
Yeah. No, I'm... thanks. And it's always nice to talk about Joe, and I'm thrilled that he's on this record. And he had no problem doing it and being on it. I don't think he's a huge fan of this record. I think it's a little too dark for him, and he lets me know, like, he likes the Sinatra thing I put out earlier this year a lot more, he's told me. So I love that about Joe. I love, like, running all of my work by him, and when he likes it, he loves it, and he buys 10 copies. And when he doesn't, and when he's not a huge fan, he's honest with me. So I know it's kind of a litmus test, and I knew he wasn't going to like this. I knew it just kind of wasn't. It was a different journey that I'm on with this record, and I'm cool with it too, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
How do you get funded for using all of these great artists? Is these all family favors, you know, that come
That's
together
a really good
over
question.
Years? And because of that,
is
the process slow?
No, the process is not slow with me. It's the slowest it's been with this record just because it was really ambitious, but it's usually I have that lined up before I call on folks to be a part of a project with me. But I'm always trying to be as fair as I can. Like not union rates fair, but like sometimes I try to come close, you know. I really do try to I'm calling in for sure. I'm calling in favors. You know, I know all of those friends on the recording made a lot of sacrifices, you know,
to
be a part of it. And I know that they do that for me more than they would.
Well, the
for
playing
a cold
is not
call.
The hard part, right? It's the sacrifices to get there, to be there when everyone else is there, to put out the time and energy.
And that's truly the investment, man.
Exactly.
I think it's the past 20 years of making music and building trust with these musical families that I've been building. I think that's really what I'm trying to preserve in what I'm doing, right? It's the long game. So
and you're
I love
delivering.
That.
It seems like all of these experiences are what I kind of refer to as camp experiences.
Uh-huh.
You know, you get in the studio with these people that are all doing it because they love you, they love the process, and they love the songs.
Oh God,
you know?
I hope so. If not, stop. Right? Like no, really. If
for
they're
real, right?
if they're all getting together behind the scenes and going like, oh, for fuck's sake, I guess I'll do another one of these with him. you know, I don't want to know that. I love hanging out and
with, you can with tell, friends. And, you can and doing tell that, on you know? Stage. You can yeah. tell in the performances out there. You know, just punch in Friendly Rich on YouTube and right. show me a screen cap of one person not having a good time. We'll make right that on. A contest, actually.
Yeah.
We'll send you a shitty supergroup t-shirt if you can find one unhappy face in a Rich Marcella video.
Amazing.
An unintentional.
Amazing. Now that is a contest I can get behind.
What is the most enjoyable song for you to play live?
Oh, gosh. What's it been lately? I think that kind of changes, but... I really like what's going on with the title track "We Are All Terrorists." Like, it's really comfortable. It's really, it swings at times. Now it's like it's really kind of evolved, right? I love seeing that fermentation.
How many people are on stage for that?
It's this four piece that I've been working. Beautiful. So D. Alex, Phil Miles, and Matt Fong and I. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah, man.
And just before that, you mentioned that you did a Frank Sinatra album. What you put out was Songs for Only the Lonely, mm-hmm. a take on the 1958 Sinatra classic album that yeah. everybody has to hear. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you may be saying, hey, Davey, you know, what are you talking about? Listen mm-hmm. to Sinatra. Mm-hmm. It has been listed many times as the number one sort of or number within the top 10 stoner albums of all time.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the best.
Yeah.
Smoke one. Listen yeah. to yeah, wow, Songs wow. for Only the Lonely. Nice. And then jump to Riches
yeah.
when you take the second joint out yes, of your pocket.
Yes, I think that's required.
And is yeah. that sort of, it is uh-huh. not a sequel or an updating. It's an interpretation.
Yep.
But it's not a mad, maniacal interpretation. It's another mood of you.
It is. You know, as you age as an artist, I've been thinking like, well, you know, I give it when I'm on stage and give a lot of energy. And I've been thinking to myself, like, am I going to be able to do this when I'm, like, older? And it's already hard to do now, to be frank. And so I thought, let's be frank. Let's just be, like, really nosebleed. You know what inspired it? That. I'm pointing to the Second City
Second
book.
City.
And the sketch that inspired that whole record is... It's Eugene Levy on the ground doing Perry Como sings oh, okay. the classics.
Beautiful.
And just nosebleed, you know, when he's lying down on the stage. So I thought, can I reserve my energy and just do it in one voice and really low register, and that band is shit hot.
Which band is this?
Well, we put together a band. It's with several of the Lollipop people. So it's Nicholas Robertson on the guitar, oh, awesome. John Meyer, a longtime bass player I've played with on many of my records on bass, Tanya Gill on keys, Dave Clark from the Rio Statics on Legend. Drums, and I'm missing, and David French, who did the arrangements okay. on saxophone, and Julia Hamilton on the bass clarinet. So what a fun
some serious
band.
Players.
Yeah,
there.
No,
yeah.
for sure. And it's it stands as a really beautiful jazz recording that I wouldn't have done without David French.
It is absolutely. And to go back to the whole hip hop value yeah. of what you do paradigm. I mean, these uh-huh. are one of those slow burns. This album, I implore all music supervisors to pick up. It's a way of using mm-hmm. Sinatra on a different level. And, you know, frankly,
yes.
you get paid on Frank.
Right.
So, you know,
yeah, nice
they're good
one.
Things to be a part of. Get those covers going, listeners.
Nice
that's
one.
Always, always hype in the music supervision game. Are you watching a lot of TV? Do you notice these syncs on TV when there's like a great song and a great moment?
Mm. Do I watch a lot of TV?
Or films, I mean.
Films. Yeah, I'm trying to think. I watch enough TV. I'm just trying to think of like, no, I don't really pay attention too much to, sometimes I'll be annoyed if I see like, what's that? Is it Big Little Lies?
Yeah, there's
that
a show.
You don't have anything to do with that, do
no,
you?
No, 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 no. Okay, rip on I, it.
Before
Let
I
it
rip.
Rip.
Full in,
Let it rip.
I just felt I notice it when it's in the foreground. And that there, sometimes I'll notice if it's too many fucking placements.
Yeah.
I like yeah. Diegesis. Big fan of Diegesis. Right? That's cool to me. But lay off a little bit. Like it's
I think we're leaning
it's not a music video. People.
We're moving towards that.
Yeah.
I think
we're really smart. You see it when it's smart, and they're trying to be smart.
Yeah.
So that got
The diegetic use of it on that show is amazing because it comes through on her, on the little girl's, you know, system and all that stuff.
Yeah.
That works. And I agree, when you're sort of painting the last 5 minutes of a show with a montage with just a song.
Yeah.
It sometimes is just too much, you know? Especially when that song's too big.
Yeah.
And it just overpowers what you're listening to. You forget.
Yeah.
You bring too much baggage to the table with what you know about that song already. Why I like to use independent music.
Nice. I admire your spirit, man. We don't know each other that well, but I'm so impressed with many elements of you, and like some of them are, you fucking respond to email, which is like even that is weird to me.
Well, I'm not in the music business. I'm in the communication business.
Well, you do it well. You do it super well. Cheers. Super group. It's impressive, and I find it refreshing that you're passionate and actually understand it and make the time to get it. And that's kind of rare in today's world, you know?
Yeah, well, I you know, it's funny. I think that one of the big changing points in my life was, in an odd way, Y2K. Even the night of. I was at a Tragically Hip concert, front row, kind of. I'll admit it on air. I kind of didn't know what was going to happen. Uh-huh. I wasn't positive that, you know, the world was going to be so safe.
Yeah.
And I just was making films at the time, and I knew I needed a new direction. And I knew music was it. And it felt like a super duper stoner moment. This is it. And you're high as fuck on New Year's drunk as fuck. But it's one of those things, you follow your dreams and you ask yourself at the end of the day, what makes you truly happy? And that's it. And I'm not sure that everybody had that feeling. Although when I was high and happy, I looked around and like, we're all feeling this, right?
But
when it comes down to it and the world's going to end, I want it to be a part of the music sandbox that Toronto was, you know, the music and film and that whole indie vibe that Toronto was just known for. I was a suburbanite, so just looking down on that, I needed to be a part. I'd go downtown and just hang out at Kensington and see what's the vibe of the street. Like, what is that? You're from Toronto?
No, I'm a suburbanite.
You're a suburbanite as well.
Yeah,
Brampton,
man.
Right?
Brampton.
B-Town. Shout out to all my listeners from the B-Town.
Yeah.
So what were you doing on Y2K? Where does this whole terrorism album come from? It's got to come from some like reflection on this world.
Yeah, no, it does. It really, I think, is born from.
Let's chew on that.
It's what I was talking about in that last podcast with Justin, right? The thing that really moved me is I did a lot of work in the schools promoting noise to young musicians, grade fours, like that you can make noise out of anything, that you could build instruments, new instruments out of anything, junk even, and it hit me when first Iraq invasion happened, and then the Columbine thing happened. And now reflecting on it, like 20 years later, I think that was actually the genesis of part, not this record, but certainly the trip I've been on, which is this constructive anarchy thing. Because I feel like I'm at my core, I disagree with so much of the way things go, but I want to give the finger to it all from within, like, so I fit within structures
and move the conversation being like the world conversation of culture forward by, we won't get into it, but you're also an educator and
Regent
Park people, so
I'm happy to do that, to talk about that, because I feel it's all part of the same sphere of trying to push forward positive change, and that's all inspired by I'm motivated a lot whenever I hear about it. And how many, what, Schmigalski and what was the other guy's name? The two that wanked themselves and shot themselves silly on their little summer.
Yeah. We don't give their names cadence on this show.
Yeah. You know, those fuckers, right? Like, to me, it's like I got no respect for, I can certainly feel the angst of, and they actually thought they were going to get away with it. I could feel the angst of, we've all been through that time in our lives when there were no outs. And I don't want to dismiss it as like, I know many people feel trapped And I'm super thankful that I've had outlets like music
outlets
or masturbation
to
get it out. And I think that's a lot about what I'm talking about in that song in particular, that we all have it in us to be incel assholes it's to be deconstructive in society, but I'm trying really hard to channel it, and we all have this energy, and I think it's, I don't know if it's so simple the way I'm framing it.
It's not so simple, but you know, in the way that I'm trying to explain to my daughter last night, watching Modern Family, and Will Sasso comes on, and he makes a joke going, but I'm Canadian.
Okay.
And she didn't really understand what the joke was. I said, the rest of the world thinks we're really polite. Really.
Yeah.
You know, they think this of us, and this is kind of like a joke point. It's a touch point, and it's also a point of pride that we have.
Right.
But it's not something that is just embedded in the human nature. I don't think it is. I honestly might feel the opposite, that, you know, the rage, the beast is actually the human nature. We have to work to be good people. We have to work to be polite. We have to work to be happy, monogamous, and a good dad. And
amen.
Hey, man, you got to work at these things.
Yeah.
And if you feel that is too much to handle as a head game, that you have to work for the things that seem so easy and natural, you're kidding yourself, because you always have to check yourself.
You know, I hear you on that end, and like someone like Dave Clark has always tried to remind me when shit goes down, and it's like it's on a weekly, almost daily basis now that you hear of shoot-ups and high school. Columbine was the first in a way, and it wasn't even, because in my hometown of Brampton in the 70s, I know Scott Thompson, the comedian, and other peers dealt with a shooting in Brampton, a high school shooting. Was the name of the guy who shot up his high school. I think it was Brampton Centennial, if I'm not mistaken, right? So it's happened before, of course.
Yeah, it's not a strictly an American problem at all.
It's certainly
and I don't want to come
it's
off saying
not.
That.
But I
Which
mean,
is why I think it's absolutely interesting that you as a Canadian are making this album. Because we do have a different perspective.
We
digest the media in a different way.
Yeah.
And your deconstruction of it.
So any week I would have released this record would have been a good one, because it's always in the news. So a lot of it, I think a lot of it's inspired in a way by what's going on in the U.S. in a lot of ways with gun control too. That's kind of all wrapped in there, you know?
It's there. You can definitely feel it in the terror variations, which come up and kind of hit you over the head.
Yeah.
And they're bold. It's not like, again, the hip-hop paradigm of skits and whatnot, where that kind of slip in and they're cool and whatnot.
Right.
This
right.
is the opposite.
Right.
You know,
right.
these are bold statements.
Yeah.
Are those based on specific incidents of terror or your interpretation of it? Where do those come from?
No, I wanted it to be inspired by hip hop. I wanted it to act as kind of the thread through the record, and I did a couple sessions with the Element Choir.
Okay.
Who Christine Duncan and the Element Choir. I mean, many of you may have heard them in the Witch soundtrack, right? It's very, very
cool.
Scary stuff. So they're in that kind of creepy sound ecosystem.
Sure.
And speaking of friends, like, I really love that most times I call Christine, she's always game to do something silly like this. So it was. So we took the We Are All Terrorists tune, and kind of did all these variations around it. Kind of deconstructed it in a lot of ways. The backwards, the you name it. And then I asked the other thread I should talk about is longtime producer Greg Dawson. I had him mix the whole thing. I think that kind of gave it a cohesion. The only direction I gave him for all seven of those variations was, like, fuck it up, like make, like cut and paste it, like really make it weird. And he did, and I'm really proud with how it came out. Yeah. It's terrifying though.
It's disruptive.
Yes.
It moves the conversation forward.
Yeah,
it's beautiful
at
the same time.
Yeah.
I might have cried once.
Okay. It was dusty. I hear you. I feel it.
What is the most emotional song to you on the album?
Oh God.
Because these are big topics, and it can't have not played on your heart.
For sure. I mean, low. The two tunes actually that the Layright boys do are pretty dear to my heart. Low is just, I think, pretty self-explanatory in terms of we all suffer from depression of certain sorts, and that was me kind of dealing with that. In like, there's nothing else I can say about that. That's just it was a easy one to write, And
it seems like almost one of the easiest ones to have made as well.
Yeah,
it's,
yeah, yes.
It's and singular, and, well,
with
it's
the,
dark.
With the Leigh Wright boys, like they're pretty. It's Nicole Robertson and Graham Mansfield, and it's a guitar, two voices, and a mandolin, right? And so like singing in harmony, and that was fun too, by the way, to not sing and be in the foreground, like trying to shed the ego as much as sure. possible. So Rebecca Hennessy sings a couple of tunes with the mariachi, and then she also sings in with the Woodshed Orchestra. So
right.
I love that. I'm what more and more of that.
What instruments do you actually play?
I play guitar and clarinet, but you hear my clarinet and it squeaks through on this record. It's not golden, I'll say
so
that.
So you're more of a Quincy Jones and the Phil Spector.
Brian Wilson.
I love the
art of production and certainly pulling together everybody, but composing and arranging for sure.
Did specifically the sort of friendly rich vibe, and this is your 11th studio album.
Yeah.
Did that come poetry first, or did it come with the love of music first?
Yeah. You
know, whacking things out on the guitar.
All of the above. I wrote what's the tune that came to me. Little Dead Birds hit me while I was at the urinal, and I just sang it into my phone and went home and arranged it from there. Yeah. I tried to really channel Tiny Tim on that one. I love singing in that high register too. That's fun.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. With the Dinner Is Ruined band, right? So that kind of sent the minute I got into the gas station studio with Dale Morningstar at the helm, it felt like I was sitting in on a Coke Machine Glow session. It's like, holy shit.
Beautiful.
Boom, there's that sound right away, you know? Yeah. So that hit me, actually. I heard it.
Our listeners should all listen to Coke Machine
Glow. Do it,
Glow.
Over and over.
11th Fret, I think, is my favorite song ever.
Yeah.
Because it's just so loose and punky, and it's real, and it's great. Right so on. Is that album maybe your earmark for like a found sound camp environment, what you're
sure.
trying to earmark?
Sure. Like his production, there were a lot of things coming through in the making of those songs. So I did Don't Trust Nobody, E-A-I-O-U, and Little Dead Birds with the Dinner Is Ruined band. And yeah, they're Gord Downie's band on that record, and it shows, right? You can hear it. So that was an honor to be with those guys and to have their trust, right? And that's Dave Clark. He just builds, he's an inspiration. He builds community with all of the projects he does, right? And when he's not into it and not feeling it, like, he's not faking that. And I like that. I feel great about it. Like, I feel really motivated and empowered by that, to have that trust, right? That means everything to me.
Absolutely. Yeah. I love the songs where there's a technical element to it that really puts a smile on my face. Something like on an older album, Dinosaur Power, Fatwa, which speaks to me because, you know, we're always in a joking way talking in my family how Yiddish and klezmer music doesn't live on. How's it going to live on?
Yeah.
Well, let it live on with songs like Fatwa.
Thanks.
And because, you know, it really reflects on like that Larry David episode.
I was kind of freaked out when I saw, is this going to be the thread throughout this whole season? Fatwa. I was like, I wrote Fatwa, the musical.
So what came first? Did yours come first?
Okay, so
they stole that idea from you, became a thing, but it would be
hilarious.
One of the very popular season. Yeah. People would say, do you like Larry David making fun? And yeah, I do. I do like him making fun of my people because the comedy is what resonates.
Yeah,
and
man.
This kind of gallows humor, this look on it. And if klezmer music has to live through the punk lens of you guys or Gogol Bordello or something, I'm all for that.
Whenever we would tour Germany, I've toured Germany about... oh God, I think 6 times now in the past 10 years. And all this music that I was making seemed to have a family over there. It's like, holy shit, they're all doing it out here.
Yeah,
you know what
sure.
I mean?
But we've lost, you know, so many heroes and sort of writing the influence that I feel on your album. First of all, I've got to shout out one of the tunes that speaks to me. It is that Fatwa song, which is a man vibe. They're like, but
yeah, nice.
In writing down all of these things, I have some of the past heroes that have passed away recently. Robert Hunter,
mm-hmm.
Daniel Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
We have like Joe Meek and Moondog and Wesley Willis and Alan Sherman, who I know they're making a movie about.
Oh, wow.
But it goes from like geniuses from Zappa, who mm-hmm. is next level studio Brian Wilson-y,
sure.
to those simple Daniel Johnson or just Moondog. Like, where did you, what hole did you crawl out of and start making music?
Love it.
You know,
love it. Love
the hole
it.
You
love
crawled it. Out of is Brampton.
Yeah.
But that's still outsider. Yeah. This is outside. Yep. If nobody, you know, doesn't know Toronto, the Toronto's always known as like the six, or has always been known as the six.
Yeah.
It became cool when Drake started saying it, but the idea of the GTA and these communities is that there are all these thriving suburbs just outside of Toronto.
Yeah.
Just outside. We all identify when necessary as Torontonians, but we all are outsiders.
You know what I love?
Everybody you know from Toronto is an outsider.
I love when I meet a young kid who's a producer, and it's like, where are you working out of? And it's like, if I hear my parents' basement in Brampton, which I'm hearing more and more and more of now, I'm like, yeah, that's exciting. You know, it's
that's where Grammys are born, though.
Yeah, it doesn't like fucking matter.
We're talking Boy Wonder, Nikhil Seatharam, T-Minus, all those
it's
guys.
It's nuts.
They're Grammys coming out of basements,
right? And for real, and it doesn't matter. I've said this forever that it doesn't matter where you make your art. Like, it really doesn't. Like, it's more about the art. I'm more interested in what you're making than where the fuck you're making it. And that's how I had to defend that when I was growing up coming out of Brampton. Because it's not a place of like, you're not too proud necessarily to come from a place where it's kind of sterile, right? Like, there's nothing going.
There's
culturally,
no...
there's like fucking fuck all. But that's how we had to create our own culture in presenting festivals and being weird.
Well, it's a weird environment because, as everybody know, Brampton has something called Frankenstein fruit trees.
Okay.
Explain this to me. The song Family Tree is about your Italian grandfather who planted these Frankenstein fruit trees.
Yeah, man.
Where did this song come from? How do you shape your history through sort of exaggerated fiction?
It's funny that you should say that because that's actually in the book that I just released too, The Family Tree, which... it's obviously made up, but it's a grafting, right? It's inspired by...
well, the real thing, minute to minute, ain't maybe that exciting.
Yeah.
The interpretation, the lens you put on it, just all of a sudden makes
thanks.
It palatable.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm interested in the fantastical. I like Dadaism, you know. I might join the rhinoceros party. They were grooming me last time we played in Rimouski. I love their form of protest. I get in really interested in all of that stuff, right?
Absolutely.
The absurdity of it all
is
exciting.
Subversive. That's where
I live. Yeah. Yeah, baby. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Thank you. I can see that.
On every album, you do say, and shouts to Justin and the Broken Mixtape podcast. You just had a great interview. If you want to hear more about Rich, go over to there. He did mention on his podcast the quote, you pulled it out, one can either produce or become produce.
Right.
Tell us about that quote. Tell us about the great Smalucci.
Yeah.
Where did that come from? Because it's on almost every one of your albums.
Yeah, it is.
I know this is a repeat of what Justin talked about, but it's a golden man.
Oh, thanks. I love that. We created early peers, like dear friends of mine that I used to work with when I was in high school, just making weird creative clay animated porn and shit. You know, I made clay animated pornography with, you know, like with old film, what do they call that? 8mm? I'm no film guy.
Yeah, Super 8mm.
Super 8, thank you. So we did Super 8 clay animated porn. And that in my parents' basement, and that hit me, this line of let's make shit and not become produce, which like you could definitely like a lot of vegetables, right? Like just like people like zombie, call it what you want, right? People that are just kind of not. I fell in love early in my life with making shit.
This is on what is the earliest album that you have that on?
Friendly Rich and the Anal Assassins, the first thing I put out,
which amazing.
Is, I mean, I'm embarrassed by that title.
Okay.
A lot of that early music is what I was shitting out, and Tom Green picked it up and placed all of like two early records that aren't even in that bundle for you that on the Tom Green Show.
Wow.
And then he kept using it when he went to MTV, and that was like a really exciting moment to have like all my shit over his antics was like, I felt very connected to that world, and I'm more proud of it now than I think, because I love the way, I was very worried that he would become like
a joke,
a carrot top, or kind of not like dismissed. But I really love the way he has aged as a thinker, and I take him more seriously. I know it sounds weird to take a comedian seriously, but I do.
No. Yeah. Looking back at Tom Green, it's much more of an Andy Kaufman thing happening than anything.
I love being in the shadow, in the penumbra of his shine.
That is, to me, what you're supposed to do with music.
Right on.
There's supposed to be a life beyond it. Not only are you supposed to feel it in the music and let your imagination carry you,
but
maybe there is something you can discover that has a visual element to it. Yeah, and for me, growing up with The Point, it came out before I was born.
Yeah.
You know, so I discovered it.
Yeah.
Then I discovered the Dustin Hoffman version.
Yeah, right.
You know, and then I discovered that like the songs themselves have a whole different connotation than maybe I think it is. Right. As I get older, just like Sunscreen 99 you know, by Baz Luhrmann, it takes on more meaning to me as I get older.
That's I think that's music done right, is that you will grow alongside it, right? Yeah,
absolutely.
Nice one.
And you've stuck to it, and I still think it's like, when we go back to how do we make good films and how are we good partners as music supervisors, it's because when we're doing the right thing, when we're doing good work, it's because we're focused on the story, the theme, the one thing that drives it. That's what's important. And the one thing that I see as a through line between all of these is that line: one can either produce or become produce.
That feels good. Thank you.
With that, we'll close it out. Friendly Rich, Rich Marcella, Brampton's finest.
Thank you, man.
Thank you for doing this, brother.
If I should lose my mind, oh, we'll hark back to this here time. Oh, when I spoke in honest truth, that I would be here right next to you. If I I was rolling back so fast I had to short a couple hundred screws.
Music Supercast is a production of Sorrel Studios and distributed by the Sound Off Media Company.